Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Security Ledger podcast. I'm your host, Paul Roberts, editor at the Security Ledger. We're nearing the end of another busy week in the security world, from World Cup-themed phishing attacks and, of course, more data breaches this week at P.F. Chang's, Domino's Pizza, and AT&T. Among the top stories this week were a number of warnings about malicious software and attacks on Google's Android mobile device operating system. Here to discuss this week's news with us, we have Zach Lanier, who's a security researcher at Duo Security and, fittingly, one of the authors of the Android Hackers Handbook, just out from Wiley. Zach, welcome back to the Security Ledger podcast.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
We always love having you. Can we talk just for a second about Android Hackers Handbook?
Sure. So I co-wrote the book with Josh Drake from Acuvant, one of my former colleagues who is the lead author, Stephen Ridley, Georg Wachurski, Pau Oliva, and Colin Mulliner. So quite a motley crew of people.
I was going to say an esteemed group.
Yes, everyone with their, you know, has sort of their area of expertise and interest, and they contribute that to the book. So if you've read, for our listeners or you yourself have read any of the other Hacker's Handbook series of books from Wiley, in particular, iOS Hacker's Handbook is one of the models that we kind of followed. So our book sort of goes up and down the stack of Android itself, everything from discussing the overall design of Android, especially from a security standpoint, to application level security. Most notably, that was one of my major contributions to the book, so I'm a little biased. That chapter in particular discusses sort of analyzing Android applications using some open source tools and looking for common issues, how to kind of exploit some of those issues, which in and of itself could be an entire book, quite honestly, as could many of the other chapters. And then some of the other things discuss the radio layer of Android. Others discuss kernel exploitation in Android. And then sort of you know, compendium of tools and links and things that are interesting, which is about Android. So it's very a very broad book, much like many of the other Hacker's Handbook series of books are. So it's just kind of really for people who just want to kind of hit the ground running with Android security and get acquainted with sort of hacking on Android. It gives a very, you know, very wide swath of information.
And what if you are somebody who's inclined to tinker with mobile device platforms, what are Android's strengths and weaknesses, particularly compared to its main competition, iOS, Windows Mobile?
The thing that a lot of people just kind of point out with Android just in general is this idea of fragmentation. So you know, some people argue against it, saying, you know, well, fragmentation isn't really a problem. Those are usually the people who are working for Google or, fans of Android. So that presents a bit of a problem in terms of being able to really make security controls consistent. You know, it's easier to target older versions because they lack some of the newer security features like SE Android, which is a fork of SE Linux or Security Enhanced Linux that's been ported to Android, that adds some additional application security restrictions. There's this could still be some confusion about permissions management on Android. It's certainly improved over time, but trying to explain what a certain permission or capability actually means to a layperson can be difficult. Google certainly improved that dramatically in the last couple of years, but you know, it really might be difficult for my grandmother to understand what location data collection means, you know, if it's not really kind of distilled down as much as possible. So overall, I would certainly say Android's improved a lot, but my bets are mostly on the Google Experience devices or some of the Nexus series of devices, which don't have all that carrier bloatware on it.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned fragmentation, and by that, just, you know, for the listeners' benefit, you're talking really about the fact that Google makes the Android operating system, but then it OEMs it or releases it to any number of hardware makers, handset makers, who kind of roll their own version of it to work with their hardware, and then strike separate deals with carriers who will then typically add a whole bunch of software applications into the standard image of it that is then sold to their customers. The problem has been that when patches come along or new versions of Android, those often don't go far beyond Google's doorstep because carriers and then their customers both would need to make sure that that update works with their hardware and with their software, and it just seems to gum up the works. You say some people kind of discount that. Do you see any evidence that Google is getting more of a grip on that problem, or is that just something that's going to be endemic in the Android ecosystem, that you've got a lot of unpatched devices out there?
I think that Google has made major strides in improving their sort of their hold on Android and their influence over how device manufacturers and carriers and application developers do stuff, especially in a secure manner. It's improved a lot, but it's not quite where it should be yet. Like you said, that gumming up the works, right, with carriers kind of being a choke point for updates, whether it be due to testing newer versions of Android or simply because of planned obsolescence. It's gotten better, but it's not great. And I think kudos to Google for the progress that they've made. And I think it'll definitely get better. I don't know how soon, but at this trajectory, soon enough-ish.
Yeah. And it should be said that it's more than just mobile devices. I mean, Google really sees Android as a foothold into wearables and telematics and connected cars. So, I mean, it's go-to operating system for all kinds of Internet of Things devices. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the I wish I could remember which in-car entertainment system it was that was recently planning to switch to Android. It escapes me right now, but yeah, I mean, it's certainly getting more popular in unexpected areas, right? Home entertainment stuff, wearables, like you said, and in-car stuff is a little frightening, but given some of the activity we've seen in that area.
Yeah. There's not a lot of fault tolerance, and there's not a lot of room for error, I think is a better way of saying it, when you're going 80 miles an hour on the highway.
Yeah. For sure.
So as we look at the Android security space, we look at this malware, are there things that you can do to try and force better application coding practices that would make the environment more robust and resilient? To me, just saying that, it sounds kind of like boiling the ocean. But so is there something that you could do with the population of Android developers to increase security? Or are there things that Google could do that would further lock down the system, make it more difficult to do malware and exploits?
Well, so given just the open nature of Android and its conduciveness to developers, tinkerers, hackers, or anyone to basically innovate and kind of use it as a platform for kind of whatever they want, being able to sideload applications or install from third-party sources, that could always open up an avenue for people to kind of shoot themselves in the foot if they don't really know what they're doing from a security standpoint, users in particular. I think that education is pretty important. Like I said, with the permission stuff, actually distilling down some of the descriptions of permissions has certainly helped. And educating developers and providing them tools and resources to, restrict access by malicious apps to their application and its data, that's also pretty important. And Google has certainly baked in and improved a lot of security features over time inside of Android that attempt to do some of those restrictions by default. They've certainly learned some lessons from some of the stuff that researchers have pointed out or that they've discovered internally that, you know, may have otherwise opened up access between applications by default, you know, to you know, various like programmatic interfaces and things of that nature. And I think that something like this is more of a this banking Trojan that is certainly more of a platform / user awareness issue, because apps that, you know, in this case, for instance, the app can intercept text messages. Well, if you wanted to install an alternative text messaging app, that would need to do the same thing. So it's a little difficult to sort of make that capability go away without sort of alienating a bunch of developers and, you know, maybe upsetting a bunch of users who really prefer a third-party text messaging app. So this is more of the platform allows for this capability, but the user installed this malware that intercepts text messages by using a legitimate feature in the operating system. And yeah, it's definitely a delicate balance. You know, certainly iOS, for instance, has just restricted a lot of these things by default. So it's tough. It sort of depends on what the situation or problem is to kind of give an answer about what the control might be.
So we were talking over the news of the week. You mentioned a compromise or a proof of concept hack against application containerization technology that you think might be kind of a sleeper security story.
Sebastian Kramer, or Stealth, has long been developing like awesome, crazy Linux kernel exploits. Awesome, like brilliant hacker. In particular, this most recent proof of concept called Shocker. You know, it's a little C file that's got a bunch of crazy structures and system calls in it that ultimately allow for a breakout of from Docker, which is containerization, like you said, application containerization technology. It's built on Linux containers. It's very popular for amongst, you know, kind of the DevOpsy crowd and people who want to like quickly roll out these isolated, you know, like web server and then, you know, database server and all this stuff in like a lightweight virtualization environment. So what Stealth discovered was that despite the sort of restrictions and, you know, file system restrictions, namespace restrictions and network restrictions, et cetera, that Docker provides, there, in particular, there is one file system structure, FS struct, that inside of this this Docker task or process that is shared between the sort of host OS and the Docker contained sort of guest. And, you know, we've seen this kind of stuff before in VMware, VirtualBox, Xen, et cetera, where, you know, so-called guest-to-host escapes are very well-received among the offensive security community. This is kind of cool. His proof of concept just steps right out of the Docker contained guest and pulls etsy shadow, which of course has the, you know, usernames and password hashes on a, you know, mini Unix like operating systems. So kind of neat. You know, we like to see guest to host escapes, and given Docker's popularity, you know, hopefully this will fix this proof of concept will cause this issue to be addressed. But certainly it's nice to see kind of Docker get it to, you know, get some offensive security attention in this way.
Yeah, absolutely. You have a presentation coming up. You were accepted to talk at Black Hat Briefings in early August out in Vegas. So first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
And second of all, you know, what are you going to be talking about?
It's two talks, one at Black Hat and one at DEF CON. So partying for a week or doing professional speaking engagements for a week, as I, you know, depending on your how you view professional speaking engagements.
We'll see how it goes. We'll see how it goes.
So the talk at Black Hat is I'm doing with Kelly Lum, one of my close friends, and we're going to be talking about data loss prevention or data leakage prevention, depending on which term you prefer, DLP as it's more commonly called. Just some of the research that we've been doing there. It's kind of a thing we've wanted to, we've discussed talking about for a while now, and decided to kind of finally go for it and start to, you know, share some of the stuff that we've been working on. And it's mainly around DLP bypass or some of the issues that are in DLP administrative interfaces, endpoint monitoring agents, things of that nature. So we picked a few sort of high level or I guess high visibility DLP solutions to kind of compare and contrast some of the issues in each of them. So it'll be interesting. You know, it reminds me of kind of like the AV you know, antivirus attack days. You know, you've got these agents on endpoints, and that either introduce attack surface or are easily bypassable.
Well, and in fact, a lot of the antivirus companies ended up acquiring data leak protection companies as a backstop in a way. But there have always been questions about the utility of it. I've heard folks refer to DLP as just keeping good people from doing stupid stuff technology, because there have always been issues with attackers encrypting traffic to and from, and DLP products often have a hard time with that. And just how do you tune it finely enough to catch the bad stuff without gumming up everybody just trying to do their job, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's actually a really fair assessment of it, to keep people from doing dumb things. But I think what we've kind of learned is that parsers are hard. It's hard to parse complex document formats.
Indeed.
So that doesn't really help people. So yeah, and then the second talk at DEF CON is sort of a follow-up to some of the IoT and build it securely stuff that Mark Stanislav and I have been doing. So we're going to be sort of doing a redux of that with some new info.
Listen, Zach, thank you so much for coming in and talking to us here on the Security Ledger podcast. We always love hearing from you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me. I look forward to the next one.
All right. Take care.
You too, Paul.
Bye.